There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Hello, everybody, and happy Thursday. I'm Wendy Nix, Josina Anderson, Victor Cruz, and Rob Ninkovich. We will start this afternoon in Costa Mesa, California. Philip Rivers will welcome and has welcomed reinforcement this afternoon, and it came in the form of his Chargers running back, Melvin Gordon. He called the Chargers on Wednesday, said it was time, and that he would end his 64-day holdout. Indeed, he has. He has reported to the team facility. He is still subject to $2.2 million worth of fines while losing out on almost $1 million of base salary. Here is Jeff Gordon arriving in the Chargers locker room.
Then he came back with his shoulder pads and what they do? You pick up my phone call? Hold on, y'all. Then he came back with his shoulder pads and
Wow. Well, that was Melvin Gordon, of course, arriving back. I mean, it's like the prodigal son returning. That was actually pretty fun to watch. And Josina, I think my first question would be why now? Because the initial indication was that this holdout would last a bit longer. And yet Melvin Gordon decided to come back.
Because things change. And at the end of the day, Melvin Gordon is a football player who wanted to play football. Obviously, there are other circumstances, too, that include, you know, the fines that he was accruing, 1.2 eligible to be fined, and then the base salary, almost $1 million. Remains to be seen how much the team will actually assess, and I don't think that's anything that they would want to announce because you're not trying to encourage other players to do that. But I think the question here is, you know, how do you evaluate the holdout? Because on one hand, people are like, oh, you only did it for three games and all these fines. And what did you really achieve? Because the whole point was to get this long-term contract. But one could also potentially measure success by the fact that at least for those three games, he did maintain his health. There was no ligaments torn. He still has the ability to earn a long-term contract from another team via free agency, so long as that he's not franchise tagged by the Chargers.
Victor, let me ask you this. You like the fact that he came back now? We knew he'd come back by the end of October. That was necessary in order to accrue credit for the season and become a free agent after the year. But what's your take on the decision to come sooner rather than later, if you will?
I do like that he came back early. I think a couple of things. I think he's realizing that this team needs him and that they're struggling a little bit in that department, and any additional help, any more playmaking ability, any more, you know, guys that can come in and provide a spark for this team is needed. And Melvin Gordon is that type of guy. And I think he's just sitting back. He's counting the money that's being, that he's being fined week in and week out. And he's thinking to himself like, man, I need to be out there playing. I need to be out there doing what I need to do, being a football player, like Josina said, and going out there and helping my team. And I've been in this position, not really this far into it, but I've held out for a couple weeks. And you just think about your teammates, man. You just think about those guys are going to war each and every week, and you're not there. You're not buckling up, going to war with your friends and your teammates, and I think that may have weighed on them.
It's got to get hard. Not only the fines. I mean, that is what it is, and it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But to that end, if you love playing football, Rob, to sit at home and not be doing that has to be difficult, I would think.
Oh, I've never been in that position, but I couldn't imagine having someone tell. And then also they have somebody telling them, their agent, hey, man, I got you. Don't worry. We're going to get you paid. Yep. Like, you're going to have to do this, though. If you want to get paid, you're going to have to do this. And in the back of your head, he's probably thinking like, man, I'm missing football right now. Mm-hmm. I'm missing being out there making plays and being with my teammates. And, you know, they've struggled a little bit. They've struggled now on offense a little bit. They don't have that dynamic guy in the backfield like he is. So, you know, as a player, you just want to play football. Mm-hmm. And the contract will take care of itself if you take care of the things on the field. I know he's been great, but, you know, unfortunately it is a business. And sometimes you got to play hardball and sometimes you got to fold.
Yep. And that's why I think the question is, did he come back too early? Because when you look at the first two games, Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson were combining to get over 100 rushing yards. In this last game against the Houston Texans, I don't think both of them combined went over 70. Then you start to look at the schedule of teams that they were getting ready to face. You have the Titans defense, you have the Bears defense, Packers, what have you. Would that leverage have increased a little bit more, you know, had that just been extended, particularly since you already held out for those three games? My understanding is, of course, you know, There are, you know, people who would probably have liked that to extend a little bit more, but ultimately it is up to the player. He is the boss, and he is still seeking a long-term deal, which it doesn't look like either way he was going to get before the holdout, during the holdout, and even after the holdout.
That's right. It just didn't seem like it was in the cards. Steve Young joins us, as he does every Thursday. And, Steve, I would like your opinion here on Melvin Gordon's decision, not only to hold out, but also to come back today when he did.
Well, I think this is the, we talk about it every week, this is the new norm where players feel empowered and they feel like they're going to win. Even if in the end, like Le'Veon Bell, you can make the case that he didn't win. Well, he's at a team that he wanted to be. I mean, this is going to happen more and more. And how it plays out is really going to be how the league wants to deal with something they can't necessarily control. Look at what's happened with Jalen Ramsey. He's not going to let them play him and not trade him. So he's going to disappear to Nashville and not allow that to happen. So I think Melvin's doing what is now the cat's out of the bag. And so I'm not surprised by it. And now that he's back today, what it does for the Chargers is that there's the Chiefs and there's the Patriots. And everything else is kind of three iterations below that. And I think it helps the Chargers start to believe that they can compete not only in the AFC West with the Chiefs, but actually could get into a playoff scenario and beat one of those two teams, which right now I don't know how that's going to happen.
Well, you're right. It's a case of the haves and the have-nots. We've seen that very early on in this season. And it's funny you mentioned Jalen Ramsey. Perfect segue, Steve, because it's just been a week of sort of one thing after the other. First, Jalen Ramsey, of course, was out early in the week with the flu. He was sick, and then he came back and he couldn't practice on Wednesday because of tightness in his back. Doug Marrone said it happened. And now he has left the team to be with his family for the birth of his second child. That event is in Nashville, so he's gone and won't be back. And here was the statement from the team. Months ago in the offseason, Jalen notified me that he was expecting the birth of his second child in late September. We spoke about this recently and again today after practice and decided it was best for Jalen to fly to Nashville tonight after meetings to be with his family during the birth of their daughter. He will return to the team when he's ready, and we will provide an update at that time. Ramsey's agent also said via Twitter that he appreciated the Jags allowing him to leave, and I'm sure this is happening. I mean, sort of the child's born or not, but it is a continuation of a situation that doesn't have a resolution just yet.
I mean, I think the circumstances that are happening around Jalen Ramsey really allowed a perfect moment to kind of assuage all of this, right? Because what I understand, the baby is scheduled to be born before the game. And then he really, I understand we have conversations about that, but spoke to multiple sources. He really was sick. I want to go into the degree of that. And so all of those really were the perfect circumstance to help figure this out in the meantime, right? Because Jalen Ramsey's stance has not changed. He doesn't want to be a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So now it becomes, who's going to relent first as this situation continues to extend? Who's going to get more tired of this situation as it continues to extend? And furthermore, it actually is also an opportunity for Jalen Ramsey to potentially see his value increase. This is not like the Chargers with Melvin Gordon coming back, who are facing the Dolphins this weekend. The Jaguars still have the Broncos. So without him, you're asking guys like DJ Hayden to step up. Maybe his value continues to increase, not only with teams watching, but also with the Jaguars too.
Well, yeah, I think it's just been just up and down with Jalen Ramsey, especially coming off of last week, all these different things that are happening with him and his situation. But I think the Jacksonville Jaguars have some questions to ask. What are they going to do with Jalen Ramsey? How do they want? Because now it turns into, like, if you go in the locker room, how are those teammates reacting to him, right? How are they feeling about all of this? Obviously, in the locker room, we're friends. They're friendly. But there might be guys that probably don't like what he's going through and probably are like, man, if you don't want to be with us, don't even be with us. You know, I don't know how those guys in the locker room.
But you're the first one, and Nick can understand also not necessarily getting in a dude's pocket.
No, of course I understand the pocket, but he's not holding out for any money. He's not holding out for anything. He wants out. He
yes.
wants to leave that right. team and go somewhere else.
He doesn't want to be
money
there.
Play.
He doesn't want to
be
there.
He doesn't want to be there, but also understand that if he's going to another team, that's probably going to come with, you know, some extra dollars
course,
as well.
Yes. I understand
right.
that.
And what I mean by pocket, I mean in his business, more so to speak.
No,
like, you understand
understood.
That's his individual circumstance.
But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. teammates line up and we go to war each and every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to come to war with us anymore, there might be teammates in that locker room that are like, all right, bruh, stay on that side. I don't want to deal with you. You don't want to be with us? cool, that's fine. I'm not that type of teammate. If you're going to come up and line up or you got your own personal issues, I treat you as a friend, as a player, as a person. But other people in that locker room might see it a little differently.
Well, let's go back to Steve Young, because, Steve, you referenced Jalen to begin with. Again, is this a situation where you feel like the Jacks just have to cut bait or cut this and run, since it doesn't appear he's going to play?
Wendy, I think it's going to be in flux. I mean, I you can see that the team is trying to create an image, a perception, maybe it's a reality, that they really will do anything to try to keep him. And maybe Tom Coughlin in the background is saying, look, I'm not going to win a battle of wills. What can we do with each other? How can we mend this? The real question is, are you going to play on Sunday? Are you going to be on the field? If you're going to be on the field, then we win. Because you continue to play, and we continue to try to work this out. Because you can't keep doing this. I got to go to Nashville. I got a stomach ache. I got a, you know, the flu. I can't. That can't keep going. And as long as you keep playing, they keep maybe making the case that you can stay. And I think that's what, to me, that's what's the real question. All this stuff that's happening during the week doesn't matter. Are you going to be on the field? And if he's not on the field, if he actually forces the Jags not to play him, then it's inevitable. They have got to trade him very quickly and try to get the best they can from. So this battle of wills is really kind of now a battle of who's going to be on the, if he's going to be on the field or not on Sunday.
Well, that makes sense, because I certainly understand the Jags wanting to keep Jalen Ramsey. They are a better football team with him on the field. But if he's not going to play, if he can't be out there, won't be out there anyway, then you really, to Steve's point, you have no choice.
Well, when he's having a kid, right? So you can't say, well, unless the kid is due in a month, right? And he's like, well, I'm going to take some time before the baby comes. But, you know, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I don't know why we're laughing, too. Some of this has been nonsensical anyway, so it could happen.
You know, James White, you know, he just had a son, and he missed the game. Kyle Vannoy from the Patriots. Two Patriot players missing two football games because they had a child. So I can completely understand missing a football game for the birth of your child. You know, so as far as him missing practice and not being there because he's having a child, like, I completely can understand that. I don't have any issues with him missing a game for the birth of his child.
No, and I think the real question, though, becomes what happens when that event has occurred.
Has,
you know, when you look
on
past that and it's time to make a decision, and then I guess,
exactly.
And then I guess
but
we'll see.
But I think we already know the answer to that. Jalen Ramsey's stance is not changing. He does not want to be with the Jaguars. So it's going to be, how are the Jaguars going
That's
to handle
question.
That?
Fair enough. That's the
with teams still chomping at the bit. Because even 2 days ago, I had a team calling me, what's going on with Jalen Ramsey? You know, what's going on? And you were just asking real quick, like, how is his teammates going to react to that? When they had the blow up on the sideline with him and Doug Marrone, if you remember the video of that, there were players telling Doug to get away and crowding around Jalen, letting them know where their allegiance was.
Exactly.
So I think you kind of understand that dynamic. Sure, obviously they would like to be fighting shoulder to shoulder with him, but they understand the adversity that they've been going through long before they were able to win with Gardner Minshew. This is going back to last year, things that he doesn't agree with, how he's been played. However, I think we got a little feel of that dynamic with his relationship with Doug, just based on how the podium thing was handled. I know he was trying to say he was laughing at one of our reporters or what have you. I think that's you know, but.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It's ongoing, and it's been going on, is what I'm trying to
say. Correct. And that's a fair assessment.
True.
Well, despite his assertion to the contrary, it would seem, or so says his agent, that Antonio Brown is interested in a return to the National Football League at some point. Here is Drew Rosenhaus, a guest on Warren Sapp's 99 Problems podcast on Wednesday.
I believe that Antonio wants to continue his career in the NFL, and I've mentioned that. I have had discussions with a few teams that are very interested in him and want to know about his future and what's going on with the NFL. And hopefully when that is all resolved, Antonio will be able to continue his Hall of Fame career.
Well, late this morning, Antonio Brown was back on Twitter, and he said this: I am still the best. Why stop now? Presumably, he's talking about football and a possible return. Later, he tweeted, the game need me. I'm like test answers. Josina, I think at this point,
you, I didn't even see those.
You have to, you really have to think about this as a person who may be dealing with a lot of external issues here, internal as well, rather than just Antonio Brown, the player.
Oh, there's no question that there are people around Antonio Brown, people that are in his circle from the past, who care about him, who have been around him, who have expressed concern to me about just what is going on with his mindset, you know, his livelihood, you know, his stability. At the end of the day, is if you want to use entertaining or clownish, all this stuff looks, there's still a person dealing with some stuff. And I can't tell you when all those tweets were happening on Sunday, how it wasn't even my game. I was doing the Browns game a Sunday, and I was getting so many texts just about Antonio Brown. I had people calling me who have tried to reach out to him, who are in his past, just really, really expressing some concern. So when I was tweeting about it, I was trying to get it back to that tone, because it's so easy to make him the punch of a joke. When you really realize that when comparing to how he was as a sixth rounder coming out of Central Michigan, when he was a member of the Bugatti Boys with Emmanuel Sanders and Mike Wallace, and how he started his career, mm-hmm. compared to where everything now is, looking from the outside in, tweeting about trying to get back into the game for a person that has that type of talent, that's crazy.
It is. It is. And certainly you hope those that are in his inner circle, the people who have his best interest in mind, can get
putting that first,
can get that through to him and put that first. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, don't blink. Week 4 starts tonight. The Eagles receivers lead the league in drop passes this season, 11, including 7 against the Lions last week. On the flip side, we got the Packers. The defense has allowed 11.7 points per game and lead the league with 8 takeaways. And according to our Football Power Index, the Packers have a 64% chance to win tonight. If that happens, the Eagles' playoff chances will drop to just 7%. They will be without DeSean Jackson. He's still dealing with an abdomen issue, but they will get Alshon Jeffrey back tonight from a calf injury. The Packers, on the other hand, may be without Za'Darius Smith. He is questionable with a knee problem. Smith already has 3 sacks and 7 quarterback hits. We will say hello now to Michelle Steele, who joins us from Lambeau Field. And Michelle, already first-year head coach Matt LaFleur has had short weeks. His second Thursday night game this month. How is he approaching the limited work time?
Yeah, Wendy, you know, Matt LaFleur just is not going to overcomplicate things. He said that the Packers are going to run, quote, their best hits tonight on offense. That might be a bit of a head scratcher for a team that, by their own admission, has struggled to develop a rhythm through 3 games. 29th in the league on third down conversions, 31st in the league in 3 and outs per drive, just behind the Jets. Now, most concerning, the teams are taking Devontae Adams, of course, their top receiver, out of the game. I can tell you he's getting frustrated with that, and they're going to need to scheme him open tonight. As Aaron Rodgers said this week, referring to last week against the Broncos, 4 targets for Adams just isn't enough. Now, speaking of Aaron Rodgers, I was with the Eagles this week, and this defense is extremely aware, I would say, of what they need to do against this Packers quarterback. They need to generate some pressure. The problem is, Wendy, this team has not been able to get a hand on the quarterback, just 2 sacks through 3 games. Wendy.
Michelle, thank you. This season, the Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. Actually, we'll say hello to Steve Young now. The Packers have been all about their defense, and Steve LaFleur, who's a disciple of Sean McVay's, was hired actually to be an offensive guru. So the question would be, how concerning are the Packers' early struggles on the offensive side of the ball?
Wendy, I kind of love that they're struggling. I love that they're playing great defense, because in the end, the game today for Aaron Rodgers is easier than it used to be. I mean, we know the rules have made it so. And so, you know, and Aaron's one of the great creators of all time, right? He can do all kinds of things. So let's be 3-0. Let's talk about struggling offensively. Let's figure out how to get on the same page and then explode at the end of the year while we're still winning. So, I mean, this is, to me, best case scenario. I have zero concerns about unleashing Aaron Rodgers into the future. And so, I mean, tonight I expect Aaron, watch his body language. He won't say anything, but his body language will tell you how frustrated he is. And if he remains frustrated like he was last week, I would start to be concerned. But I suspect that Matt's going to unleash Aaron Rodgers, because if they're going to play great defense, why not say, Aaron, you just throw it 50 times, the defense is going to play well, and I think that's going to be the best case for our team. That's yet to happen. I look forward to that as they get used to this new offense.
It makes so much sense, and such an interesting take, because, look, if you can have some some struggles and still put up a W, then, you know, all right, work out the kinks. What a great way to do it. And if I'm not mistaken, Victor, you sort of feel the way Steve does, that this is really all about to come together for Green Bay.
Yeah, and I think when, you know, Aaron Rodgers says that they're struggling, they're 3-0 and
right.
struggling.
Yeah. You know, we should all be so lucky.
That's the key. Yeah, everybody chill.
Relax.
You know, he's good for that. So, but I think they're trending in the right direction. I think they have to, like she said, they have to scheme ways to give Devontae Adams the football. I mean, he's the best receiver they got on that football field. They got to give him the ball early and often and just find different ways. Bring him into the slot, motion him up. Don't let them just sit back and put hands on him and be physical with him. Move him around. Move him around that offense. And I do love that Aaron Rodgers still has that control at the line of scrimmage. You hear him yelling out different checks. You hear him moving guys around. The onus of that offense is still on him, and that's the best part of it all.
And they're also playing an Eagles defense that's 29th in stopping the pass ranked. So
and won't have Ronald Darby.
Won't have Darby, exactly. And their pass rush isn't getting to the quarterback. So you think, okay, they don't have Darby. They lost Malik Jackson. Jaden Mills is on PUP. Two corners there that could help you, and they lost Chris Long. Even Chris Long retired. He was a guy that helped you in the pass rush.
Exactly.
So when you lose key pieces to the rush and coverage isn't there, that's when you have problems. So if you can't get to Aaron Rodgers, you give him time, and you're struggling in the back end.
Fletcher Cox is still trying to, you know, get back from that foot injury, having to do a little bit more with the double teams since he doesn't have Malik Jackson beside him like he anticipated.
Well, that's why I picked the Packers to win tonight and get off the snot.
Oh, well, we're not even on that segment.
Hey, me too.
I'm not on this night, having one pick last week.
Oh, man.
Well, it's official. Melvin Gordon is back in the building. He reported to the team facility today. He's back in the locker room after informing the team on Wednesday that he planned to end his 64-day holdout. He is subject to a number of fines. It's unclear how much of those will actually be enforced. But here is Gordon's return to the locker room a short time ago.
Yeah. Then he came back with his shoulder pads and him. Yeah. What they do? Didn't pick up my phone call. Hold up, y'all. Then he came back with his shoulder pads and him. Yeah.
Shelly Smith joins us now in Costa Mesa, California. Shelly, kind of hard not to smile when you hear that. The next question, though, what are the expectations from the Chargers for Melvin Gordon?
Well, you'd think that a lot of people would think he would come with his tail between his legs because he actually essentially did lose this holdout. He lost a lot of money, $1 million from three games in the regular season and up to $2 million for training camp. But it's unclear whether the team will try to go after it. But that's not his style. His style is he's happy. You saw him smiling. You saw Keenan Allen cheering. They love him at this team, and they are excited for him to be back. He is not the reason they went 1-2 in the first three games this season. But he is a reason that they can cheer and they can have a spark and they can get somebody in the backfield. We believe he is either undergoing a physical this morning or he went through one last night and plans to be back on the practice field because, as you've heard, he missed the money, and he missed being with the guys on the field. So we expect him to do something on the field today. He will not play against Miami. We're not sure if he will travel yet or not, but I wouldn't send him to Miami, would you? but here we go. Here we go with Melvin Gordon. Everyone's upbeat because he's back.
All right, Shelly, fair enough. Thank you. Other running back news around the league after seeing specialist Dr. Robert Anderson on Wednesday for another opinion on his high ankle sprain. Giants running back Saquon Barkley still expected to be sidelined between 4 to 8 weeks, the longer timeline considered more likely. Adam Schefter reporting that it's going to take some time. The 3-0 Dallas Cowboys head to New Orleans to take on Teddy Bridgewater and the Saints. Dallas has lost 5 of their past 6 games when they play at Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Here's our own Ed Werder with more.
Well, Wendy, Amari Cooper participated in the portion of practice today open to the media. Head coach Jason Garrett used the term hopeful in describing the team's expectations for the wide receiver to be more fully involved in final preparations and then play Sunday night against the Saints. Garrett mentioned both Cooper's ankle and Achilles in discussing the injury further and suggested it's an issue that Cooper has been managing for a while. The Cowboys not only need Cooper to be able to play the entire game in his normal role, they require his unique explosiveness and ability to create separation from defenders. There is nobody that Dak Prescott trusts more. Cooper is first among the Cowboys in virtually every receiving category and tied for the NFL lead with 4 touchdowns. He's scored in 3 straight games for the first time in his career. In week 3, Dak Prescott threw both of his scoring passes to Cooper, and the quarterback averaged twice as many yards per attempt targeting Cooper as he did on all other throws. The Cowboys are already playing without number 2 wide receiver Michael Gallup, who had arthroscopic knee surgery, and Wendy, wide receiver Tavon Austin missed the past 2 games with a concussion, but he's been able to practice and should be available to play against the Saints.
Ed, thank you again. Let's look ahead to week 4's debut, I should say. That's the Packers and the Eagles. Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers. Here's a look at their best throws. Week 13, 2017. This is Wentz under pressure. Scrambles, pulled down, but still Victor gets that throw off.
I mean, to have the strength to still get that throw off, I'll be pulled down by defense.
It just shows the talent that Carson Wentz has and the things he can do, once healthy and out there clicking.
You want to talk talent? You got to talk Aaron Rodgers. That is for sure. Divisional game against the Cowboys in 2017. Tied at 12. The spin. He shoots the ball down the sideline. Almost out of bounds to Jared Cook.
Against the grain. Falling away. Throws a perfect strike. Dime. Dime.
All right. Tit for tat. Wentz no stranger to making a pass under pressure. Just 2 weeks ago. Up the middle, looking for the receiver, gets wrapped up and still manages to make the pass into the arms of Matt Collins.
See, I love the battle here, but he's got to be careful. He means too much to that football team to take hits like that.
A very valid point. Aaron Rodgers again, 2016, Cardinals, Packers trailing 20-13, calling up offense to the line, trying to beat the clock, and there it is, fellas.
Jump ball. Go up and get it, right? High point.
They're all just mesmerized watching the ball in the air instead of attacking him. Pat P knows better than that. Oof.
Our last Wentz throw, week 7, 2017, Eagles and Redskins surrounded, hit, but manages to make the throw into the back of the end zone.
Nothing worse as a D lineman hitting the quarterback. You expect him to have the ball and it's a sack and it's a touchdown.
Right? Talk about a turn of events.
Exactly.
That's a
what?
Big swing right
what
there.
What happened? Kind of just flicked it out there too. He barely put any juice on it.
Sack, fumble, or a score. And then a great pass here from Aaron Rodgers. Second quarter, 20 seconds to go. Week 2, 2016, escapes a tackle. Caught by who else? Devontae Adams. This is what he is capable of doing.
Oh, he's yanking his throwing arm to the side.
That's why the baggy jersey helped him.
Give me some that room. Thing?
That's that
thing?
Throw it, yeah.
That's right. Well, we're joined again by Michelle Steele from Lambeau Field. Is Michelle with us? Michelle? Yep, she's out there somewhere. We talked to her earlier. Oh, there she
there
is.
She is.
Hey, Michelle.
Michelle.
Where are you?
Thanks,
hey.
Hey.
Listen, you covered the Packers earlier, Michelle. I got to ask you about the Eagles. They, too, coming off a short week, and there's been some struggles, especially with that defense. What's the sense around this Eagles team right now?
Well, let's start out with a positive, right? A fun fact here, Wendy. The Eagles head coach Doug Peterson, he's 4-0 on Thursday nights during his tenure in Philadelphia. That's a record that he attributes in part just to paring down the game plan and, quote, getting back to our core stuff. Now, a core offensive player, receiver Alshon Jeffrey, expected to return tonight from a calf injury. I was in Philly on Tuesday. I saw him sprinting around. He was doing some extra work, so definitely positive signs there. I can also tell you that even though the record is 1-2, nobody's pressing the panic button yet in the building, where many people feel that this team is essentially 2 drops away from being 3-0. Now, they do need to catch the football. 7 drops last Sunday, including what would have been a game winner. Now, let's talk about the Packers' defense right now, guys. The confidence level on this defense just could not be any higher. Veteran quarterback Tremont Williams pointed out to me the other day that when he won a Super Bowl with Green Bay in 2011, they had the number 2 scoring defense. I checked the ranks, and that happens to be exactly where Green Bay sits today. Williams also added to me, quote, "We feel that we can play even better." Pretty good. Wendy?
Michelle, look, that confidence is justified. They have been playing exceptionally well. And even with all the drops, the Eagles offense, though, still one of the best in the league. They are converting 56% on third down. Great. And they're 25.3 points per game, tied for 9th best in the league. Wentz was asked about the 1-2 start earlier this week.
We're not really looking at this as a bad spot. We're 1-2, yeah, but, you know, we have a lot of the season left, you know, and we're little things here and there in each game that we know we're going to get corrected and we're going to be in a good spot. And like I said, we're excited Thursday night to go show what we can do and get going back in the win column.
All right, we'll say hello now from our Domino's pregame headquarters, and we talk a lot about this Green Bay offense for understandable reasons, but I want to talk about Carson Wentz and this Eagles offense specifically. If you take catch the ball out of the equation, which I recognize is the simple answer, what do they need to do?
Well, they need to just go out there and play with confidence and play like they're the Eagles team of a year ago that went out there and dominated. I think they have to figure out just who they are coming into this season right now. Obviously, Carson Wentz is there, but the 11 drops right now is just glaring to me. And mind you, these are all in the fourth quarter. You got Nelson Aguilar here. If he catches that ball, he's in stride all the way to the end zone. And these are huge drops in monumental parts of the game to potentially win the game or potentially make it a competitive game towards the end. These are touchdowns that we're seeing dropped here. And those are the plays that they can't miss. Those are the opportunities that Carson Wentz and that receiving core has to come through on if they want to compete at this level.
You never want to drop the ball, but you're right. They've been in such glaring spots. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't help but miss it. Meanwhile, it was a bone of contention at one point, and so the Packers tried to address that defense.
Yep.
And wow, I mean, the early returns are solid. What have they done so well?
And it starts up front. The Bass brothers, the Smith brothers, and I'm going to go through a couple plays yeah. here, what I see here. So this is Preston Smith, and I'm going to show you Preston Smith on the edge right here. I'm going to show you his edge rush. So he gets up the field, great get off, gets up the field, and I like this right here, stop. Stop, stick your foot in the ground, and come right back to the quarterback. And where's that quarterback going to be? Right in your lap, because the coverage is doing their job. And then, okay, celebrate. Have fun with your teammates. There you go. Smash the ground. Yeah, jump on them. Okay, Smith brothers. There we go. And now here we go. Low red. Now I'm going to show you Za'Darius Smith right here. He's on the edge. Right here, coming off the edge. Let's see what he does. Low red. Power. Even a double team. Push through the power. Quarterback's right there because guess what? There's no one to throw to. Where do you throw? Where do you throw? I don't know. You can't throw anywhere. So there you go. Sack. Now what?
Celebration time?
Let's crawl. Okay, crawl. Now what? Let's eat. Okay. And let's wipe ourselves off. Let's wipe off. Okay. I like it.
That was elaborate. That was elaborate. That is combination coverage.
That's what you need. You need the coverage.
Exactly. Yes. So you have to have
at every face.
Look, you can get to the quarterback, but if the coverage isn't there, they're going to throw the football. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. So as a defensive lineman, you have the coverage and you have the front. That's when you have
And you
magic.
Know the Ravens could have used that, too, against Patrick Mahomes because, boy, they missed T-Suggs even though he's up there. But they missed T-Suggs. They missed Za'Darius in terms of, kind of what happened in Kansas City.
Will you do that whole thing for us at the end of the show?
Yeah, what was that?
Was this one?
No, the crawl part.
Oh, the crawl.
Stay in your seat. Don't do it for real.
Okay. Right, Steve. Good thing you're out there and not in here. I see you do it.
I think about that all the time.
I know.
I'm safe. I'm a safe distance.
He's brushed off a few times.
I bet you do. All right. How about some QB Q&A then, since you're safe out that way? Who else better than Steve Young? Let's just start with Carson Wentz. Again, his receiver's got to catch the ball, but what's he need to do, Steve?
Well, I think Carson is like any young player. You see that with Mitch Trubisky as well, just trying to do too much. Like they feel the weight of the city and the organization and their expectations to be in the Super Bowl. He watched the Super Bowl, so that's in the back of his mind. So he's going to be trying to do too much. He's not going to end that. But in some ways, by trying to do too much, the overthrows, there's some issues with his game, his footwork. Like, just settle in. He's going to be there 10 years. Don't try to win a Super Bowl in one week, and I think things will get better.
All right, Dak Prescott playing an MVP level. Steve, what you going to pay this man?
Well, in the NFL, if you have a quarterback, you have a chance. And now the Cowboys have got a guy that they believe, they weren't sure the ceiling with Dak. They're like, he's kind of a sudden thrower. He wasn't somebody that you thought was going to settle in and be one of the top five guys in the league. And also you say, what is the ceiling for Dak? It has raised. And so because of that, they got to pay him right now. They're going to have to pay him like he is Russell Wilson, like he is Aaron Rodgers, like he is Drew Brees. They're just going to have to do it. Too bad.
All right, too bad. So sad. That's a good problem to have. What are your expectations for Daniel Jones after just one but still a solid start?
I think he'll never throw an interception. He'll throw three touchdowns the rest of his life and score. I mean, that was an amazing start. What are you going to say? Things will get tough because the Giants are going to give up 30 points a game. And the Giants are not going to be able to score 30. His job is a hard one. It worked out last week miraculously. And I, you know, but what we saw, he can replicate that. He can do that kind of stuff again. That's the most important thing.
All right, with the 0-3 start, when should the Redskins start to think about Dwayne Haskins? I will also add that Colt McCoy is back at practice, Steve.
It's so hard to understand exactly when the guy's ready. What I'm hearing is that he's not ready. Dwayne's not ready to play in the NFL. And so, you know, just like Patrick Mahomes, maybe it's just no matter what, no matter the fact that what's happening in the NFC East next door and the Daniel Jones, whatever's happening with Dak and Carson and the future of the NFC East, if you're going to compete, you got to have this new guy come out. In the end, if he's just not to be on the field that week, I mean, this year, just commit to it. It seems like that's what they're committed to.
All right, we're committed to quarterback bingo, Steve. We'll see you in just a bit.
All right.
I look forward to that, and we look forward to another round of cruise control, backed by popular demand, okay? Victor's
here
in the driving seat, but we all have opinions, too. Okay, but it's about the road less traveled, shall we? So we have a choice here. We could go down the way of the Chiefs or the Patriots as the team
Make
to
the
beat
right
in the AFC.
This is an easy
See, this
one.
Fork in the road is hard choice.
Yeah. Okay. Choose wisely, Vic.
I'm
right behind
wisely.
You.
And they're going to need a big car because they got a lot of teammates. Oh. And I'm going with
The whole
Patriots.
Team.
Way to be out on the limb there.
Listen, until someone slays the dragon,
the Patriots
are the team to beat in the National Football League, especially with the way they started off this season, coming off hot. 13th ranked completion percentage. Tom Brady has been crushing it, getting into all his receivers, getting into those playmakers early and often, and getting in the end zone and making things
happen.
Did
you see the AFC Championship game? I mean, the Chiefs were one bad position away, you know, with the
but
defender.
But it didn't happen.
And I'm going for it. And
Flip, he's like, I'm going down. I'm going to New England. And that's where I stay.
If was a fifth, We'd all be
intoxicated.
Whoa. Listen, I don't know. It's proven otherwise. I don't know why anybody would,
otherwise.
You know.
It's not an argument.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Shall we? Now, this is a different story. More success. We're just talking about their rookie year, which is now Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones.
I am going with, and I'm going to give him a bicycle.
Oh, because it's going to be slow going anyway?
It's going to be a slow and steady process, and I'm giving two bikes. But I'm going with Daniel Jones, mainly because of his decision-making. I love the way he makes decisions. He's in the pocket. He's unwavered. And if we look at the film of this game, he's taking some shots. He's delivering the ball while taking some hits in that pocket and delivering the ball down the field. And when he decides to run, he's not just running because he can. He's running when he's obligated to run, when the defense dictates for him to run. So it's, again, it's back to being smart, making smart decisions with the football, making smart decisions as the quarterback of that football team. JoJo, I see you want to make a comment.
Because I understand why they want to call him Danny Dimes. He has put a couple in the basket. I understand. However, it is a little bit easier to make decisions, as you said, when Saquon is absorbing so much of that because that's where the... And he's not playing
but
this week.
But when Saquon was down,
he still made those plays. And there was a field goal that was missed that we might have a whole different narrative right now. So what I'm saying is that I want to see how it's going to look when Saquon is not there. And if all this stuff you're talking about, still applies next week. We're going to get a clear shot of that against the Redskins. But I'm going to give him due credit. You know, he has been looking good.
Saquon's not going to be there, so we will see.
We'll see.
Okay. All right, the road less traveled with regard to, you know what, either way it's tough here, but 2-0-3 teams, you got the Broncos and the Steelers more likely to rebound. And you should have saved the bicycle for this one.
I'll go scooter.
Oh dear me.
And I'm going with the Denver Broncos.
Really?
Enlarge the scooter so people can see it at home. I'm going with the Denver Broncos for two reasons. One, Joe Flacco. I think they have a quarterback. And if you have a quarterback, you always have a shot. And not just any quarterback, a quarterback that's been through things, that understands the ebbs and flows of the National Football League and being a quarterback. And then you go to that defense. That defense understands how to put pressure on the quarterback. They know how to get back there. Von Miller, they understand how to play the game of football, especially defensively. Those two things culminating give the Denver Broncos the best opportunity and the best chance to kind of come up out of that.
I don't mean to say that we won, but I hear what you're saying.
And I disagree.
You do? Okay.
Because Denver...
has Flacco as their quarterback.
Okay.
Hey, I played him many times. Okay. You can only chuck it up and hope for Flack for so long. Okay.
Mm. Okay.
So I like the Steelers. I think that the young kid Rudolph is going to make some noise, and they're going to have to make some tough decisions next year if he continues to play well.
Ben's injury notwithstanding, I just did not see this coming for the Steelers. I really didn't. I thought last year would prove to be sort of an aberration.
Some people had them going to the Super Bowl.
Some people did. Some people thought they had an outside shot.
Can I just say one thing? This has been the mock turtleneck version of cruise control from Victor. Okay, thank you.
There he is. All right, speaking of the Steelers, they will take center stage with our Week 4 Monday night matchup. It's the Steelers and the Bengals, a battle in the AFC North, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. And our coverage will begin Monday night, countdown at 6. All right, some call it quarterback bingo. Some call it Steve Young's favorite time of the week. Either works. Every team represented here. We spin, we choose, we talk about the quarterback. I get to do it.
I dream of this, Wendy. I dream of it.
I know you do.
I'm in the middle of the night. I can't sleep thinking about bingo.
I know. Listen, I'm going to send you something. I got it.
I got a good one.
Should we throw that one away? No.
Throw that one away.
Are you going to talk about Tom Brady? Because that's what I think.
Throw it away.
No, why not? I mean, think about it. First of all, it's the most important. Playing quarterback in the NFL, being one of the greats is, think about it, there's only 5 guys in the world, and he's one of them, and it is the most difficult job in the world, you could say. How can you make it so much more? He married Giselle, and he makes 25,000 times more money than anyone on the team, and they still play for him, they fight for him, and he still plays great. He is the most amazing guy at 42, and it does also say how much the game has made it safer and actually made it easier for a guy like Tom. And you can play at 42. You might be able to play at 45 because the game is not as physically demanding as it once was.
It's incredible to think about because we talk about 42, but to your point, Steve, he's really not slowing down a whole lot. I mean, they're 44.
Hold on. Where do you see him slowing down? Give me something that he's slowing down. Give me
nothing.
Something.
I don't understand what was the Giselle part? I didn't catch that. But
I'm just saying how complicated your life can be. How do you still play the hardest job in the world and your life is already, it makes it more complex and he still thrives? I mean, I can't, no human can do what Tom Brady does. It's impossible.
All right, now that clears it up.
He is true, Tom terrific.
Now I'm going to select. We're going to go forward. Here we go.
And then we go
Let's
back.
See what we got. Let's see what we got. Let's see what we got. Okay. Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, boy.
Cincinnati Bengals.
All right, let's do a little round table. Do you have any belief that Andy Dalton, with his new coach, can kind of catch fire? I actually thought that it would be significantly better than this. Does any of you three feel like there's some hope here?
I think that's
tell me why. Steve. Tell me why.
I think it's a little early.
They're one-dimensional and they have zero
run game. AJ Green will come back, right?
They have no run game. Yeah. When you're just a throwing team, that's all they can do right now is throw the football. So their offensive line's kind of a modge-podge of different guys. They can't run the football, last in the NFL and runs. So, I think it's tough for a guy when you can only do one thing.
But I guess my question is, who is Andy Dalton? Is he the guy that's going to bring this team to the next level? He's been there for a number of years now, and it feels like the same story every time we see him.
But he has to have the pieces, and they've been suffering from so many injuries. And they did do better. Remember, he got hurt. This is when Hugh Jackson was the offensive coordinator at the time, and then he got hurt. So they have been on the cusp. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah, but the fundamental question, JoJo, is do you think that Andy Dalton, because all this stuff's happening, and the really good players, they rise up. Mm-hmm. They bring people, they make people better.
Yep.
It's not always just a mitigation around them at all. Oh, this is the problem. There's all kinds of problems. Everybody has it. But the great players rise up, and I just keep waiting. Andy, when are you going to lead this football team away from its historical mitigation?
Absolutely.
Bringing that rationale.
I would just say to answer, since he asked me a question, I do think that Zach Taylor has the intellect of offense. I do believe that.
I do too.
But I think having lost, it's hard to create that trust and that credibility in that relationship when you're already starting off with so much adversity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Who's picking next?
I do like the combination.
This is poorly noted.
It's Victor. Now he's just the shit.
I'll come to the back of the line.
Victor, stop making this extra. Just get the ball out. Okay.
We are going with the Los Angeles Rams, Steve.
There we go.
Mr. Jared
Goff. I thought it was
Goff. System guy.
I hear you. Rob, I hear you. I worry because you can see that when the Rams, like that game last week, the Rams are a really good football team. You just get that sense that they're going to cruise through the season, get to the end and have to make a big play or do something more than 3 points and maybe they can win a Super Bowl again. But there's some level that Jared Goff, is he a guy, like we just talked about, that can rise up at those key moments and put people on his back and I will get it done. He has done that. So he's already proven to me that he can do it, but is he the guy that's sustainable like Drew Brees, like Tom Brady, that over the years you see, you know, like, you know, Santa Claus with a big sack on his back, like, can he be that guy? And that's the question I have about Jared, because he seems like a guy that likes to just go along with this success, and he can play along, and that's, there's an art to that too, but there's that moment where you put a stake in the ground or whatever metaphor you want to use, and I got this, and I do want to see more of that from Jared.
And right, gotta do it away from LA and not wait a whole half to get it going like they did last week against the, you know, whoever they played. Okay, there you go.
Steve Young. These guys are too young. Did you watch the Brady Bunch? Steve, did you watch it?
Oh, it's my, are you kidding me? My kids in the car, in the van. It's on rewind. I've now watched the Brady Bunch since I was 5 to now when I'm 55. It's like, it's got it. Oh, wait, I'm older.
All right. It's the 50th anniversary of the Brady Bunch. You know, Marsha. I love it.
Yeah, I've watched it 10,000 times.
Listen, well, Tom Brady hasn't played football for that long, but he's thrown to all these folks. We'll talk about the Brady Bunch next. Anniversaries all around. Happy 50th to the Brady Bunch. The show premiered on this date in 1969. The sitcom about a man named Brady and his family enjoyed a 5-year run. The NFL's Brady, well, we're on 20 years. It's done so with a bunch of different players around Tom Brady through the years as we take a look at the Modell Gold Standard stat. He has the second most passing touchdowns in NFL history, and in all, Brady has thrown a touchdown pass. How about this? An NFL record, Rob Ninkovich, 72 different receivers.
Wow.
And while the Brady Bunch signed off 3 years before Tom Brady was born, it didn't stop Tom Terrific from creating a bunch of his own. In his career, he's thrown to a Moss, a Branch, and even an Underwood. And it doesn't stop there. Brady won his first 3 Super Bowl rings, throwing to names like David Givens, David Patton, and Troy Brown, who doubled as a cornerback. Plus, don't forget Falk, not Marshall, but his cousin Kevin, who caught 361 passes from Brady in his career. Good from the 6th most from Tom. He's thrown 2 to linebacker Mike Vrabel in Super Bowls, and even left tackle Nate Solder has the same number of playoff touchdowns for Brady as Randy Moss does. That would be 1. In Tom's career, he's thrown to more undrafted players than first-rounders. He's even thrown to a Brady, no relation, a lacrosse player and a former college quarterback. But this season, he has a new cast of characters. 8 receivers currently on the roster have never caught a pass from TB12 before the season. Oh, remember this? So with seemingly nothing left to prove, Tom's new Brady Bunch looks to leave him with more rings than Mike and Carol Brady had kids.
That's well an old done. Shot of Tom. He's looking pretty That's, young in that one.
I know. Well, he's 42 young. Years
that
young.
Was before the diet. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. 8 seasons you spent as a teammate of Tom Brady. I mean, everybody's asked to opine on what he does and how he does it so long, but I mean, what's your key takeaway, if you will, from playing with Tom Brady?
Well, you know, as a football player, you can't do everything on your own. You can't do it yourself. And it takes the coaches. It takes everyone around you, your teammates. And you know, the Patriots, the way that they run things, the culture there, every single year the expectation is very high. You're expected to get into the playoffs. You're expected to win the division. That's expected of you. So when you have that standard set so high, you just got to go to work. Every single day you go into that building, you know we're going to work the hardest we possibly can, and nobody's going to outwork us. And, you know, with all the stats of Tom and all the different people that he has thrown the ball to over the years, it's that culture. You don't want to be the team that lets down the previous 20 years of guys that have come in there and they've created a culture, and you want to continue to move forward with that culture and continue to win, because right now they're a great team, but eventually it's going to go the other way, and you don't want to be a part of that. So you want to continue to write a new chapter, so to speak, of the Patriot way?
Without question, my favorite part of all that is that he's thrown to more undrafted players than first rounders. I mean, that's
we'll take it.
That's, we'll
like
take
that.
It.
We like that.
This from Adam Schefter, as we currently look towards a new CBA, hopefully. He said that the NFL owners have proposed a situation where there would be a 17-game slate. That is a regular season schedule with no preseason games. This, according to Schefter, is a current proposal from ownership. Look, Tom Brady didn't play in the preseason. We saw a lot of players opt out this go-round. Victor, what's your take on 17 regular season games, no preseason?
Well, 16 games is already enough. Now, the preseason, I love the preseason. I myself was born in the preseason, so to speak. So I love the preseason. I think that's where you find out where your young talent is, where those undrafted guys, what to make of those younger guys and those younger talents. Now, do I think we need four preseason games? No. I think you subtract it down to two. You have one game for the starters, one game for your young talent to see what you have, and then you begin the season. I don't think we need an additional game. I think the players love the schedule that we're at right now. I just think they want to have less preseason games because it has less possibilities for injuries to key guys, and it keeps guys healthier going into the season, not have to work. Because the preseason's become, can you stay healthy for week one? Like, there's no, it hasn't been this, you know, let's see what we got, let's evaluate our talent. There is a portion of that, but holistically it's, can we stay healthy until week one?
I hate it. I think the whole proposal is very silly.
Tell us how you feel.
I'm telling you I hate it because I was a guy that had to go out there in the preseason and perform. I had to go take somebody's job, and I had to do that before the real bullets started flying, and they had to make a decision, can this guy help us for the regular season? So if you do away with the preseason, how are guys that are undrafted? So then you're basically going to make it, okay, if we draft you, you're on the team.
Exactly.
And then you're not going to be able to evaluate talent if you don't have a game. Practice is different. Look, I can go out and practice and look great. I've seen guys that go out and practice. They look amazing. Go out in a game, they have no idea what they're doing. They look terrible. So for me, I need games to play in, and I think that the young guys coming up need games too.
Well, I just texted a source around this situation, as they're still texting me right now, and they said that whether 17 games or 18 games, both are no.
Among our top stories this afternoon, the return of Melvin Gordon. He's ended his 64-day holdout. He is back in the locker room. And before we get to Matthew Berry's Love Hate, I want to ask what you think about Melvin Gordon with regards to fantasy pickups.
You know, listen, I actually think you may want to sell high. There's no guarantee he gets the workload coming back because Austin Eckler's been terrific. So I would actually, you might want to sell high before he comes back. We don't know what kind of shape he's in. Meanwhile, if you have Austin Eckler, don't get rid of him. In all of his career games where he's had at least 7 or 10 touches, he averages over 11 fantasy points per game. So Eckler, I think, is still very much flex-worthy if Gordon comes back and gets 20 touches a game. But I'm not convinced that happens. Eckler has played too well to go back to the bench. So I actually sort of think Melvin Gordon might be a sell high. Or if you have, listen, you weren't getting anything out of him, so starting next week you'll at least get something out of him.
House money at that point, right?
It is 100%. You drafted him at a discount this year, so you're loving life that he came back a lot earlier than people expected.
All right, in case you couldn't figure it out, Matthew Berry is here. We do it on Thursdays, a little love hate. We're talking about the matchups. I always feel like I have to say that.
Yes.
But let's start with the matchups or the players you love this week in particular.
All right, so let's start.
We start with quarterback? I'm sorry.
I think we actually want to start at running back here, right?
Let's do that.
We're going to start with Indianapolis's Marlon Mack. Remember, Colts 4th in rush percentage this season. It has become a run-heavy team without Andrew Luck. Marlon Mack leads all running backs in the NFL in carries so far, so a heavy workload here against a Raiders team that has already allowed 4 different runs of 20-plus runs in the NFL. It's a great matchup for Mack. I am as a top-10 play on Sunday. Tyler Boyd? Look, you know, death, taxes, and you start your slot wide receivers against the Steelers. We know this. 3 straight games with 10-plus targets for Tyler Boyd. He's 4th in the NFL in receptions. And again, Pittsburgh has allowed the most receptions and yards to the slot this season. They always struggle in that position. And then finally, hey, Jared Goff, he struggles on the road, but he is great at home today. This week, he is at home against the Buccaneers, right? Since the beginning of 2018, he's averaging over 24 fantasy points per game at home. He's thrown at least 3 touchdown passes in 5 of his 8 home games. And then you think about the Buccaneers, who, despite the fact that they have the NFL sack leader on their team, actually is one of the lower teams in terms of sack percentage. They're not going to get pressure on him. When Goff isn't pressured, he's very, very good.
Okay, I have Marlon Mack, by the way, so I'm happy.
Look at
about
you.
This.
We got 3-0 in fantasy this year.
I did, 3-0. So
just saying.
With apologies. You might want to ask me. Okay, listen, matchups that perhaps will fall below projections.
Yeah, I don't hate players. I hate matchups. I hate projections. And so somebody that I'm not crazy about his projection this week is Sony Michel. So he makes the hate list this week. First off, James Devlin placed on IR. I don't think people realize what a big impact that's going to have specifically on Sony Michel here. And then you think about this matchup at Buffalo. Really, really good run defense as well. He's averaging a league-worst 0.73 yards after first contact, so he struggled. He's not a part of the passing game as well. Just one target, zero catches so far this year. I think Sunday is a James White and Rex Burkhead day. All right, and moving on.
Same team, are we?
His teammate.
Okay.
But I actually think the Patriots win this game, but in terms of fantasy, I'm taking the under on the projection for both Sony Michel and Josh Gordon. Remember, Antonio Brown and Philip Dorsett have accounted for all three of the Patriots' deep touchdowns this season. I think Josh sees a decent amount of Tre'Davious White here. Buffalo allowing the fifth lowest completion percentage on deep passes. They defend the deep ball really well. That's why I think, again, it's a James White day. It's a Julian Edelman day. A lot of underneath
stuff. Not a
stuff.
Josh Allen day, though.
Yeah, and by the way, in this game, I mean, it's two very good defenses playing in what is projected to be one of the lower scoring games of the weekend. The Patriots have yet to allow a touchdown pass this season, Wendy. They lead the NFL with 6 interceptions. And by the way, the other thing is the Patriots are second in the NFL in time possession. It's hard to score fantasy points when you don't have the ball. New England just is so effective at holding the ball. That's one of my concerns here with Josh Allen is I don't think he gets enough possessions here to be worthy because the quarterback position is so deep.
He may not want any possessions. I mean, that defense has been lights out so far.
They've been amazing.
They have been amazing on a team that was already pretty good. Go figure. Matthew Berry, you can catch him on the Fantasy Show on ESPN+, also Fantasy Football Now.
I am going with the Tennessee Titans, 24-10 Titans.
And I'm going with the Titans, 24-17.
And I'm going with the Titans as well, 21-10.
And we cannot all be wrong again. I'm going to go to the Jets.
Oh, Wendy went against the Rams.
Trying to get a W.
That would be me. That would be me.
You know he's going to party.
As if I have anything to be proud of at 1-2. But I'm just saying, you know, listen. All right. 1-2.
We're gonna make
it
this is the week, Rob.
This
I'm not proud of that. I'm not proud of mine.
What happened was Adoree Jackson muffed that punt and just made it down.
All right,
spiral,
point
man.
Fingers, JoJo.
For you all, this is not for me because mine was smart. But anyway, it's time for making some smarter decisions. Informed by IBM Watson, Aaron Rodgers' fantasy projected high for tonight's game, 28.7, third highest among his quarterbacks this week, all quarterbacks. His lowest projection, 10.7. That's the fourth highest. Tim McManus has this to say. The Eagles are 4-0 on Thursday night under head coach Doug Peterson. The most wins without a loss by any team during that span. That's thanks to our stats department. Philadelphia was an underdog in three of those four games. He's warning us, right, Tim?
But were any of those games at Lambeau?
I'm a little nervous.
I'm nervous.
You're nervous. Okay. Steve Young, he had to go. He's got things. You know, Steve, he has busy things.
He's a busy man.
He's picking the Packers 31-30.
Okay.
So that's what
And I am going to go with the Packers as well, winning this game 31-17, even though the offense is struggling. The Eagles do not have Ronald Dollery, no DeSean Jackson. So, I'm going with the Packers. There you go.
I'm going Packers 28-17. Okay. It's at Lambeau. The Cheeseheads will be in full effect. The Eagles on Thursday night have to travel. It's tough, so I got to go Packers.
Go, Pack, go, 32-27. Aaron Rodgers is playing tonight. He's going to do his thing.
Fly, Eagles, fly.
Oh, here we go.
I'll be
listen to your instincts on this instead of going against